Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is your home for free speech, and it's not an old folks' home. It is a home like you live in, and you can speak freely. That's what it's all about. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, not .net, because that's for losers, republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the donate button and send badly needed fundage. Download the CoSertified app. How, you might say? Well, this is how you do it. Is you go to nationalbugle.com and you'll see the link to the CoSertified app. Download it and you'll see that the food that you're being served at this home, which is totally not an old folks home, is non-kosher certified. NKC, that's what you'll find. Okay. Today is our day for Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's fantastic to be here. Obviously, not the beginning of the week, and we've already had an incredible beginning to this week, because last night at 8:30 p.m. UK time, there was a documentary called The Enemy Within that was screened on Channel 4, which was all about patriotic alternatives, stating that we are Britain's biggest far-right group and with this big scary threat to the establishment. And obviously, this is something that has given us an unprecedented amount of publicity.
You are the enemy?
The enemy within.
You're the enemy within?
Yep.
Okay. So it was... It was not like a public service. Oh, here you have a new alternative. Well, tell us about it. What were they saying? How scary are you? You're an enemy. So how scary are you?
Well, I think the documentary. I'm going to be doing a full review of the documentary later today. Actually, a full review of the documentary later today. So. That's going to be something which will be, you know, quite big. I'm going to do that, as I say, later today. That'll be at 7 p.m. UK time. And what I intend to do is sort of lay it all, you know, out bare what actually went on, and the lies, correct the little bits where they've misconstrued things, which I believe they've done deliberately, where they have misrepresented us deliberately. I do intend to go there and discuss those things. And it'll probably be a 2 to 3 hour stream tonight over on my channel. But I think this documentary proved a couple of things. Firstly, they didn't find very much, because there was a guy undercover in our organization for the best part of 2 years. And in that 2 years, they only really found one thing which was a little bit embarrassing. And that was a few people telling silly jokes around a campfire about what they'd like to do to BLM activists. So it wasn't perfect. It wasn't the greatest optics ever. But it was a couple of guys at a camp at a private event making a silly joke, so not really a big deal. But it shows how little they managed to get, especially when you consider the show was about 23 minutes long. That takes into account ad breaks, intros, outros, etc. Not a long show, and it's very, very interesting that the show would be that short after so much time was spent putting it together. But the other thing that the show told me, or taught me, was that really what you've got here is a media that is so completely out of touch with normal people, so completely out of touch with regular folk. And that's really interesting, because fundamentally, some of the things that they were bringing up were things that if we were making our own documentary, if we were making a documentary about patriotic alternative, they were things we would have included, which suggests these people are, as I say, very out of touch with what we think and what the public thinks. And I'll give you an example of how out of touch they are. Now, at one point during the documentary, they turned around and said, look, you know, these guys were breaking the lockdown restrictions. These guys didn't follow lockdown restrictions. These guys were, you know, blatantly breaking the rules. They were flagrantly disregarding them. They showed leaflets where we were fighting back against the lockdown, leaflets that, you know, where we were saying, this isn't really, you know, what we want to be doing. We think it's unconstitutional. We think it's against, you know, people's rights to have these lockdowns. We're fighting back against them. We're proud that we're doing this. They showed me speaking at a public, at a private event where I was at a patriotic alternative conference, and I was saying these lockdowns aren't about our safety, they're about profit and power. They showed one of our anti-lockdown leaflets, and through all of this, they absolutely seemed to be completely convinced that what they were saying would put people off wanting to be involved with PA. Whereas I think quite the opposite. I think people would absolutely want to be involved with PA after seeing that documentary. I think people would actively think, yeah, these guys, I want to be involved with these guys. I want to be involved, you know, with Patriotic Alternative. Because ultimately, I think a lot of the things we said, like, you know, our fight back against the COVID narrative, are things that, you know, people do want. Another great example was they were very, very offended. They were very, very offended that we put up a banner that said, this is our land, or this land is ours. And that seemed to really, really get to them, really, really get to them. They were totally, totally unhappy about this. And they were saying, you know, how do you dare say such things? You know, what would you say to people who would be offended by this? You know, this was an anti-immigrant statement. And really, when you think about it, this is a very normal statement. Indigenous Britons, white Britons, holding up a banner within Britain saying, this is our land. Well, that's a statement of fact. That is true. That is something we stand by. We make no apologies for doing such a thing. To make apologies for doing such a thing would be absolutely insane, because it was true. So really, when you're thinking about this, you've got people who are clearly very, very out of touch with normal people. You've got people making documentaries that don't understand how normal people think. They don't understand how regular folk see the world or view politics or view, you know, the political and social dynamic around them. And they're making this documentary with the idea of it being a hit piece. That was obviously the idea of the documentary, was to be a hit piece. It was to do a hatchet job on us and to tell the public why they shouldn't support us. Yet here they are, presenting ideas, here they are presenting views about us that ultimately we would want them to present. Ultimately, these are the views that we would actually want the public to see. That is exactly, you know, what we like the public to know about us. This is, if we were putting together a package to show to the general public, two of the things we would have included in it is our opposition to COVID lockdowns and our love for our country and the fact that we make a claim to our ancestral homeland, the claim that is based on ethnic grounds. But this documentary was all about saying how incredibly, you know, out of touch that was with the thoughts of the documentary makers. Well, I would argue that it was the documentary makers themselves that are out of touch with normal people, not Patriotic Alternative. In fact, it shows this huge disconnect we've seen before between the views of those who work in the mainstream media and the views of normal folks who at one time consumed the mainstream media in large numbers, but now don't. And that's another important point, because this documentary, I think years ago, you'd have had a good 2.5 million people watching this. I think about 400,000 people watched it, because terrestrial TV here in the UK is dying. But not only is terrestrial TV dying, I think it's fair to say that the people tuning in are not swayed by it as they once were. So it's not only dying in terms of the numbers watching, but it's withering in terms of the power it holds over the people who are still viewing it. And considering the amount of interactions we've had, considering the amount of new inquiries we've had, the amount of web traffic we've had over the last few days, I've got to say, I'm really, really happy with that. And I'm really, really happy that what we're seeing here is almost an advert being broadcast for our organization.
And it does show how out of touch they are, because I mean, I see this all the time in the United States when they're attacking their enemies, whether it's Donald Trump 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, Donald Trump himself, to a large extent, was a product of the outrage of the mainstream media. And, they kept inviting him on their shows, and they thought that this was going to repulse people, but people liked the idea. Like, the whole... when Donald Trump came down the escalator and said that Mexico wasn't sending its best, they're sending murderers, they're sending rapists, and presumably some of them are good people, it wound up resonating. And, that's where he came from. So it only aired last night. I guess there hasn't been really a chance to see. I mean, you said that over the past few days there's been an increase in web traffic. Is that due to advertisement? Was this a heavily promoted show?
It was. There was three newspapers, the Mail on Sunday, the Sunday Mirror, and the Sunday Times, that all ran articles about this show before it went live. And because of that, we saw a massive increase, a massive uptick in traffic over the days leading up to the show, of the time leading up to the show. And since the show, I haven't got the details, but I know that last night we had a lot of people visiting the site last night as well, but I don't have the full details for today. But I think overall it appears to be something that has actually boosted our presence, and people do seem to have actually liked it. People do seem to have actually enjoyed what they saw. And yeah, some of it was a little bit rough around the edges, but overall I think it's really done wonders for us.
Did they show you projecting what was it, Immigrants Not Welcome on the White Cliffs of Dover?
No, it didn't show anything like that. No.
Yeah, that's too bad, because that would have been awesome.
Yeah, they didn't show... They showed the White Lives Matter banners. They showed all of those. They showed the White Lives Matter banners. They showed This Land Is Ours. They showed the We Will Not Be Replaced banner. And all of those things were obviously very, very well received. And interestingly, one of the things they did show was they showed our leaflet as being attacked by Antifa, which was very interesting, although they tried to frame that as us stirring up violence and causing violence to occur on the streets, which is absolutely insane. They literally watched us being attacked by Marxist terrorists and then claimed that those Marxist terrorists were our fault, which is, something that is, completely insane.
It's amazing that after, especially the summer of 2020, with all of the Black Lives Matter violence, and I mean, it was mostly in the United States, but it was in other countries. After all of that, that they would think that showing white people saying, "Well, white lives matter," would somehow be beyond the pale. No, only Black Lives Matter. How can you say that? White Lives Matter is hate speech. Black Lives Matter rioting is peaceful demonstration.
Well, that's another thing that I find very interesting. Obviously, there are never any exposés of Black Lives Matter. There's never any exposés of organisations with a left-wing or Marxist agenda. But there are endless exposés of nationalist organisations. And this was, you know, the producers of this felt they crafted this in such a way that we were going to look very bad, and this was going to justify their political point. And one of the things they were trying to justify is they were obviously trying to fight for legislation to get groups that discuss demographic change in the UK outlawed.
So it reminds me of recently, and I wish I recognized the congressman. He's late 40s. It looks like he's tall, white guy probably from Texas. And he was questioning Alejandro Mayorkas, who's our Homeland Security Secretary, who has stated that white supremacy is, you know, the biggest domestic terror threat. And, of course, Joe Biden and Attorney General Merrick Garland have made all these statements that domestic terrorism is our biggest threat. White supremacy is our biggest domestic terror threat. All this stuff, and the congressman was grilling Mayorkas and saying, "Okay, you've made these claims. President's made these claims. The Attorney General's made these claims." He says, How many cases have you sent over to of white supremacy have you sent over to the Justice Department to indict?" And Mayorkas kept saying, "Well, I don't have that information in front of me." He kept dodging all the questions. And surely, if this is the greatest terror greatest terror threat that we face, you could name an example. Name us an example. He couldn't name an example. He wouldn't name an example because, of course, there are no examples. And lots of people know this. And the people who pretend to believe Mayorkas and Biden, they know it's not true. They have to know one way, you know, that they're fooling themselves. They're purposely fooling themselves. And, you know, the question really is, how long can this kind of charade go on where Black Lives Matter violence is free speech and white free speech is violence?
I don't think I've ever heard it put so well before. That phrase there needs to appear on a leaflet.
Yeah, it came out pretty well, didn't it?
No, that is a perfect summary of what it is. You know, our speech, our free speech is violence, and their violence is, you know, free speech. It's incredible. And this is kind of what they were doing on that show last night. And obviously I'll be doing a special breakdown of this evening. So I'm obviously looking forward to this. I'll be doing it with Laura Towler. And between us, hopefully, we will, you know, be able to discuss not only the documentary, but we will also be able to unravel some of the lies and show where the documentary makers are being very disingenuous.
And use that phrase at least once. Okay, well, we're at the break. We'll be right back.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Back. All right. You know, until today, for the past few months, I've been using, as I don't know if you've noticed it, I've been using as bumper music on our shows, theme songs to a variety of British sitcoms. Did you notice that?
I don't hear the bumper music.
That's right.
Because I put it. So I wouldn't have noticed it.
Yeah.
When we start and finish, it doesn't actually play us out with the music. So no. I just I miss these wonderful snippets, this wonderful part of the production. But I probably would have recognized some of them.
Oh yeah,
I heard the bumper music.
You would have. I mean, for years I had been using Filbert Applebag's compositions, but because Filbert Applebag appears. He's a musician, and he appears with me often enough. I figured, okay, well, I'll use something else for this show. And so I've been using theme songs for British sitcoms. Well, including Monty Python, which wasn't exactly a sitcom. What else was I using?
And it wasn't actually that funny.
I liked it.
I'd get shot in the UK if people heard me say that, because in the UK, liking Monty Python is one of those things where you just have to say you like it. But you know what? I never really got it. It was a lot of people, oh, we hate you now, Mark. You didn't get Monty Python. I just thought it was that kind of irreverent humour, which is just basically a bit crappy. Do you know what, though? If you like the dark British humour, which I do, dark British humour, the best by far is Blackadder,
and that was on there. I was about
to say, Blackadder's fantastic.
Blackadder, but the theme I used was the one from the Elizabethan age, where the guy's singing in falsetto about Lord Flashheart. Lord Flashheart, Lord Flashheart, we wish you were the star. Lord Flashheart, Lord Flashheart, you're sexier by far.
Yes, you see, I loved Blackadder. And I loved Blackadder because it was dark humor. It was dark humor. It was very, very dry. It was very cutting. It was sarcastic. It was very, very British. And I've got to say, Rowan Atkinson, who played Blackadder, that is, he's been in a variety of different shows and films. He's done a lot of amazing work. But that, for me, Blackadder is his greatest work. So I know we're going off topic, but
Blackadder is brilliant. But why not? So I had that on there. I had Are You Being Served, which was a nice theme song. Father Ted, which isn't, I know.
Father Ted's amazing.
Yeah, Father Ted. And Waiting for God. But that was one that it's just sounds like some sort of, not orchestral music, but maybe some sort of quartet somewhere. But that was a funny show. People might not know it. What else was on there? There's had to be at least one or two others. But yeah, I was playing that. Why did I bring this up as a segue? Well, there's another British show. It's not exactly a comedy, and it's not something I've really ever watched, but I know a lot of people who did, and that's Doctor Who. What's going on with Doctor Who?
Well, Doctor Who certainly isn't a comedy. Doctor Who is a sci-fi show. It's a show about a man called Doctor Who. Well, not a man anymore. He's been played by a woman now. But Doctor Who was traditionally, obviously, a man. He is a creature known as a Time Lord, somebody who looks like a human being but isn't exactly a human being. And he travels through time to basically help humanity. And at the end of each series, the Doctor is reborn, and they've always explained new actors playing the role by that the Doctor is reborn into different bodies each
time.
So
it's this. Who been around?
Sorry,
how long has this series been around?
A long time, and it used to be fantastic. As a kid, I loved this. It's actually quite sort of serious sci-fi. It's more serious sci-fi, or used to be more serious sci-fi. But in recent times, it's obviously suffered from the woke agenda, and last couple of seasons, we had our first female Doctor, and now we have our first Black Doctor, and obviously, this is just another example of how, you know, things we grew up with, things we loved, things we cherished are being increasingly taken away from us. They are being multiculturalized, they are being feminized, and they are being used as vehicles. I hate the term woke, and I could explain why, but we'll call it the woke agenda, being used as vehicles for the woke agenda. Now, obviously, I do hate the term woke. In fact, I'll explain why I hate the term woke. I think the term woke is used to describe things, but it makes the things it describes sound less insidious than they are, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Well, we're hearing our bumper music. And so that means we have to hear the rest of your story after the break.
Ground floor perfumery, stationery and leather goods, wigs and haberdashery, kitchenware and food.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
One of the world's leading killer infections is on the rise in the U.S. I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. The number of tuberculosis infections in the United States was up 9% last year and is still on the rise this year. Could that be because our federal government allowed 2 million people to enter our country illegally and then distributed those illegal aliens throughout the nation? Or maybe because we couldn't focus on anything but COVID last year? Remember what the government did because of a virus with less than 1% mortality rate? Well, tuberculosis is a disease actually worth worrying about. It has a mortality rate over 12%. The U.S. has not seen outbreaks like this of this highly infectious disease in nearly 2 decades, but COVID. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, see this Pacem Parabellum.
All right, so you hate the term woke agenda. Why? I do too, actually, but why?
Well, I think it makes light of the seriousness of things that are quote-unquote woke. So you'll see and say, I'll give you an example. The Daily Mail will say, the latest woke madness. And then people will talk about it like it's a phase, like it's a fad, like it's a nothing. So you'll have people in the comment sections in the Daily Mail going, oh, when will the madness end? You know, when will these people grow up? Oh, it's time they just saw sense and stopped pushing this. Like being woke is your child wearing an edgy T-shirt with a, you know, the name of their favorite band written on it, and you know, a scary picture of, you know, a skull and some guns and a knife, or you know, a partially clothed woman, and they're like, oh my god, you know, when is my child going to grow out of this phase and stop wearing that ghastly T-shirt? And it kind of demeans what woke is about, but not demeaning it in a good way. You're not making light of it. You're sort of claiming it's a fad that will naturally go away in time, a fad that over a period of, I don't know, of a few years or months or whatever, that this woke agenda will just become old hat, and you know, people are just jumping on the latest bandwagon, but they'll be on to something new next week. And I find that really, really damaging. I find that something, or I find that opinion very, very damaging. And it's a damaging opinion. It's a damaging thing to push, because the woke, in inverted commas, agenda is not just a fad. it's not something that you can just sort of wave away. It's not something you can say, oh, look at all these silly leftists with their woke agenda. Let the children get on with it. They'll get tired of it soon. And that's what you hear. As a parent of a toddler, sometimes a toddler's doing something that's silly, but isn't particularly sort of life-threatening or terrible. And you hear people say things like, oh, well, she'll get bored of it soon. She'll come along soon enough. She'll be bored. They'll tire themselves out. And they talk, the way the Daily Mail talks about people pushing the woke agenda is if that's what it is, like a big toddler tantrum. You know, sooner or later, they'll all be bored. And once they're bored, they'll go on to the next thing and life will go back to normal. But that isn't the woke agenda. The woke agenda isn't a group of people having some kind of adult tantrum. The woke agenda is a group of people pushing a vicious anti-white, anti-moral, anti-family, anti-Christian agenda, anti-male agenda as well, that is designed to destroy the West. This isn't some silly tantrum being held by a group of odd adults who will grow out of it like it's a phase and then discard it like they discarded the T-shirts of their favorite rock bands when they realize they look silly walking about in them. This is actually something that is much more sinister and is being pushed through the educational system, the establishment, the media. This is an attack on the West. And my feeling is that by demeaning it and by making it out simply to be this, quirk of modernity that will soon pass, it actually works to underplay the threat posed by the woke agenda. Because it isn't really, when they say woke agenda, what they actually mean is cultural Marxism. Now, they'll never use the term cultural Marxism.
I don't even like the term cultural Marxist, but continue.
No, but cultural Marxism, if you look into cultural Marxism and you look into the roots of cultural Marxism, if you look into the Frankfurt School, the people pushing it, the proponents behind it, you will at least get to the bottom of it. Also, as you're getting to the bottom of it, realize that this is an academic, well thought out, and insidious push to destroy the West. If you look into cultural Marxism, that's where it takes you. And it doesn't wave away. It doesn't wave away the problems as, you know, a child's fad or a teenage rebellion. It treats the problems, whether you like the terminology or not, it treats the problems as, you know, real problems. It treats the problems as genuine issues that are affecting the West, which I feel that terms such as woke don't. Terms such as woke are, in fact, there to, you know, make you think that what are serious problems are in fact not serious problems. So that is my big big sort of gripe with the term. But the problem is, saying all of what I've just said, when terms such as this become part of, you know, the regular lexicon, which they have, it is then very difficult to push back against those terms. It's very difficult then to actually say, well, let's not use this, because everyone uses it and everyone understands what it means. And when everyone uses something and everyone understands what something means, trying to tell people not to use that term becomes increasingly difficult, if you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, no, it becomes then you wind up having to explain the origin of the term and things like that, right? As opposed to the content.
That's not what I want to get into. When I talk to people, I don't want to be talking to them and have to fundamentally re-explain, you know, everything that I'm saying. I don't want to have to start, you know, as if it were reinvent the wheel every time I speak to people. And, you know, oh, no, when we say this, what we actually mean is this. Cultural Marxism is this. You know, it's like woke, but woke's a silly phrase. So in some ways, you end up getting very much dragged in to using terms like that. But it doesn't change the fact I don't like that term. It doesn't change the fact that I find that term to be a term that underplays the threat that so-called wokery actually poses to us as people of European descent, and it poses a much greater threat than a passing teenage fad ever would or could. Simple as, you know, it's a serious issue. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, people using it in, you know, the Daily Mail or the Times or serious publications are using it for a reason. They're using it to underplay the threat that this poses and to make people who should think, who are thinking differently or thinking better, or might be aware of the problem that all of these things face. I think the idea is for those people to turn around and say, well, you know, all this nonsense will be over soon and then things will go back to normal. But I actually don't think all this nonsense will be over soon. And I don't think, you know, people will be getting back to normal. I don't think any of that will be the case. I think what will be the case is things will get worse and worse and worse for people of European descent. And as they get worse and worse and worse, we will start to see, unfortunately, everything that these quote-unquote woke maniacs wanting to do will be will come into fruition, because people will sit back thinking it is a phase and it will pass, and you know, sooner or later things will go back to normal. But actually, I don't believe that is the case at all. And I think the people who run papers like the Daily Mail, I think people who are using that term are using it with a little bit of malice, and they are using it to ensure that, let's say, people like average Joe on the street, I think they're using it to ensure that people like the average Joe on the street don't stand up to this agenda as aggressively as they should be doing.
So I'm trying to think of some sort of equivalent from a different era or a different place to the, you know, the so-called wokeism that you're seeing in college campuses and elsewhere. And I don't know if it's the best example, but I think of the hippies from 1960s, early 1970s. And to what extent did they wake up? I mean, well, one thing is so much of the hippies were, you know, there was a lot to it. They had their music. It was, you know, they had their lax sexual morality. They had their drug use. But there was also the anti-Vietnam War agenda. And people who were against the Vietnam War, including myself, tend to see little reason to think, well, I was wrong. The Vietnam War was awesome. We should have done more of that. And because they have that to hang their hat on, then Woodstock and TuneIn, Dropout, all of this, to an extent, even though they stopped, you know, even though these, for the most part, these hippies, you know, eventually got jobs and had families or whatnot. Nobody really sees a reason to disown their hippie past, you know. So a lot of them still have, you know, they might have long hair or whatever. They still cling to some elements of what was otherwise otherwise kind of a silly subculture, and B, you know, having sex with multiple partners and taking a lot of drugs isn't really a very good way to oppose a war anyway. You know what I mean? The reason I'm bringing it up is I don't think a lot of old hippies said, oh gosh, that was embarrassing. Why did I do that? And so these people who, the woke, so-called woke activists, what do you think of, you know, on the college campus? Well, you think of a lot of women with green hair and nose rings. And what's going to happen to them? Like, how, when they wake up 10 years from now, 15 years from now, what's going to happen to them? Are they suddenly going to say, oh wow, I'm lesbian married and I'm never going to have my own children? What can they do about it? I mean, because it seems to me that for the people engaged in it, for a lot of them, it's kind of a one-way ticket, that there may be no coming back.
Well, it's interesting you brought up, you know, the hippies, because I'd say this. People probably thought that, you know, the hippie lifestyle, you know, was a fad, that it was something that, you know, would blow over. It was something that would, you know, people would grow out of it and get into normal lives and do normal things, and, you know, fair enough. But what I'll say about that is, although plenty of people grew up and grew out of the hippie lifestyle, what you do see from the hippie era is that, unfortunately, despite, like I said, many people growing up and growing out of it, you will actually see that those people then often went into educational environments. They often went on to do things that fundamentally had an effect on, you know, American society and the upbringing of other Americans. They influenced a generation beyond them. So you saw people involved in, you know, somewhat militant or somewhat leftist militant anti-establishment politics. And by then, the establishment was still largely, you know, pro, I would say the establishment then was more largely pro-morality, pro-Christian. You know, I won't say it was pro-white, but it was certainly, you know, a lot more moral and a lot more reasonable in many senses. And these people then went into the educational institutions and, I believe, did huge damage to future generations by taking a lot of their warped morality to those generations. And yeah, I think...
One quick interjection.
Yeah, sure, go for it. It's your show, my friend.
It did go into... Because so many of the people who didn't want to go in the war, and there were people who objected to the war, weren't all hippies, but, you know, that was kind of a subculture. So many people didn't want to go into the war, and the way you could avoid being drafted was through an educational deferment. And so if you were in college, you got a deferment. Well, then you graduate from college. What happens? Well, if you could get into a master's or PhD course, if you could stay in and lots of people did this, stay in grad school, you would get a deferment. And so there were so many people who had PhDs from that era that the people who came along, because I was just a kid when the Vietnam War was going on, I didn't get my PhD until much later. It's like, well, okay, if you really want a good job, you're going to have to wait till these old hippies retire, because that's how many there were.
Wait, I do think the hippie, what I'm trying to say is, I think the hippie thing had a long-lasting effect. And especially when you look at some of the morality that was, you know, imparted by these onto future generations. And I think what we're going to see here with quote-unquote wokery is something similar. And it's not going to be a simple fad that people grow out of and then things go back to normal. I believe that fundamentally what you're going to see is the quote-unquote woke agenda ushering in a new normal, ushering in, you know, a new world that, unfortunately, is anti-white, anti-male, anti-Christian, anti-moral. And it isn't just this sort of, you know, benign fad that people will grow out of. And I think by approaching it as such, as a more benign fad, I think the, you know, right-wing media, if you want to call them that, you know, the Daily Mail, etc., are attempting to lull their readers into sort of a false sense of security, if you like, that, you know, this will soon all end, things will go back to normal, it's not a real or serious political movement, look down your nose at it, all these woke idiots, when are you going to grow up? But it's not a matter of when are they going to grow up, it's a matter of, you know, when are we going to get them out of positions of power? Because these people are grown up, they have an absolute, political agenda, a hideous political agenda, which is to destroy the West, and to, you know, wave them away as something, you know, as they are now, just to wave them away as not really, a threat, not really any major problem other than a passing fad, I think, does them a disservice. It does the size and scope of the problem a disservice, and it places us unfortunately, in a position where we as nationalists are struggling to get over the gravity of the situation that we as a people face to the general public. And I think that's why the term woke is pushed.
Okay. Well, all right, great. We will be right back.
Clash, or tweet the hatter's beard. From now he always shall be single. To fall in love with boys is weird, especially boys without a tingle.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
You know that nothing beats a storable food stockpile for readiness, but there are two problems with storable food. It's expensive, and eventually it runs out. Then what? What happens to you or your family when there's not enough food to go around? In a true survival scenario, you need a renewable food source. That's why Seed Armory has developed a survival-grade seed vault that can produce over $25,000 worth of crops from just one kit. Unlike other seed vaults, we don't inflate our seed counts with fillers. All our seeds are 100% heirloom and non-GMO. Not a green thumb? Don't worry. We've written an easy-to-follow guide to guarantee your success from planting to harvest. For a limited time, we're offering an additional 10% off your order when you enter the code RBN at checkout. Go to seedarmory.com. That's seedarmory.com. Don't wait. Like everything else, seeds are in short supply.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Tonight, you're a review of the hit piece on you by Channel 4.
Yeah, well, I've obviously seen this. It went out last night, and I know exactly what's been said. I've seen it. I think it was a bit of a damn squib, but I do want to go through it all in quite some depth, because I think it's important to actively correct our our enemies when they make these hit pieces on us. I think it's the right thing to do to go out there and to ensure that fundamentally we are telling the public in some way and telling our own supporters as well, that's very important, the truth about these things and putting everything into its correct context. And that is obviously what we intend to do. Then on Wednesday, I'm going to have Sam Melia and Barclay Walsh, two of the people that the documentary focused in on the most, on the actual on Patriotic Weekly Review, because again, I also think that is very important, that the people who were besmirched, who had their words twisted or misrepresented, actually can, you know, give some form of rebuttal themselves, because the show does give you a chance to rebut these things. But the show producers told us that anything we said would be edited as they saw fit. So at that point, you aren't really getting over the points you want to get over anyway.
Mm. Okay, so your Patriotic Weekly Review on Wednesday, you will have two of your own organization members who were besmirched. What are you going to do on Friday?
On Friday? That's an interesting question, because I actually haven't decided this one yet. Now, I did a very interesting and slightly different video last Friday, so I'm not really sure what I plan to do this Friday, so unfortunately that isn't going to help you, but there will be something. There will be something. I will come up with something before then.
Okay. Anything else? Should people go back? Have you had any interesting debates lately that people might want to go take a look at?
Yeah, I did have a little bit of a debate with Richard Spencer, actually, the other night on Ethan Ralph's Killstream. And that was actually pretty interesting, because Richard Spencer obviously has very much sort of changed his position on nationalism. He's repudiated where he used to stand, and he has gone over to, I won't say completely over to the other side, but he's taken a more kind of establishment centrist position. And since doing so, has spoken out to some degree against our talking points. He's obviously a big supporter of NATO now. He, you know, attacks people who say that Russia is in the right with the conflict in the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And because of that, me and him ended up having a little bit of a discussion. It was quite reasonable. There wasn't any insults. It wasn't one of those sort of like death match debates where you're shouting abuse at each other. But it certainly was an interesting discussion whereby we got to the bottom of some of his, or tried to get to the bottom of some of his new political positions.
I guess there's not time. I was just wondering if it was clear why, you know, what made him change.
Well, it seems that Richard has decided that he doesn't believe that nationalism is the winning side. Uh-huh. And because he doesn't believe that nationalism is the winning side, he doesn't want to be part of it anymore. And he also seemed to claim that because nationalists weren't doing things in exactly the way he would have done it, and he wasn't the de facto leader, he didn't want to be involved.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Mark.
Thank you for having me on.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You won't admit you love me. And so, how am I ever to know? You always tell me, perhaps, 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 perhaps.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at TLBTalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.